Okay, I think that should work. You can still hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I'll introduce you first. So, well, I guess this is my little internet radio show that I've been doing where I basically just choose songs that I like and blah, 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 and then play them. And I somehow managed to do 50 episodes. So this is my big 50th episode extravaganza. I got Keith and Hemda to do bits and my roommates and all kinds of people. So I figured it would be cool to get my parents also. So this is my mom.
The thing about picking a favorite song is I've had many favorite songs that have kind of influenced what I was doing at various points in my life. So you have to remember that this one, I was 13 years old when Beatlemania hit the United States and Canada. And the very first song that kind of really had me kind of going was I Want to Hold Your Hand, followed very quickly by She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. And what was so different about it is that music earlier than that seemed to have been so syrupy with Bobby V's and Bobby Vittens and Bobby this and Bobby that and Annette and Bobby and Frankie and all those people, real syrupy stuff. And suddenly here was a sound that came from over the water that was so different. And it just affected young people somehow. You see those scenes of the Beatles arriving in New York in 1964, and there's all these girls who are 13, 14, 15, 16, and they're screaming and carrying on. Well, I was one of those ones. And when it was first on television, I was sitting in front of the TV, screaming just like those girls. My father kept saying, shut up, you, because we can't hear TV.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you something. I think you'll understand when I say that something. I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand. Oh, please say to me, let me be your man. And please say to me, it's such a feeling that my love I can hide. Yeah, you've got that something. I think you'll understand. It's such a feeling that my love I can hide. Yeah, you got that something. I think you understand. When I feel that something, I wanna hold your hand.
It was just, it was a mania. And I went out and collected everything that was written about them, and I've still got the great big huge scrapbook of stuff that I collected in those days, and you'd scrounge every penny you could get to go and buy their records, and try to con your mother into allowing you to go to the store so you could take a commission, so you could go to the drugstore and buy the latest magazine. And it was just kind of a crazy time.
That is a
fact. I've seen that happen with other people. Like, I remember my nieces going nuts for the Bay City Rollers. But the Beatles phenomena was, it was just something else. And, of course, that very quickly changed into when the Rolling Stones came along. They were so different again because they were, the bad boys that rocked, and they didn't comb their hair, and they wore rough-looking clothes that didn't match and everything. So it moved very quickly from the from the Beatles into that.
I was going to ask, I mean, it seems like one of those kind of phenomenons that just, it just can't really happen again because, like, just the media alone, like, there's so many more TV stations. Even by the time I was getting into music, you know, same age, when I was, like, 13 or so, there was just so much more, like, dissemination of media, you know? Like, what was that example? There's, like, this famous example with the Beatles of, I think it was the Ed Sullivan Show. Is that the one? Where there's like, I don't know, that there's this huge percentage of North America that all watch that show. But that's not just because the Beatles were the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's because there was only like very few TV stations to begin with. Like, how many stations did you guys have when you were growing up?
We had, in those days, we had CBC, and I think we only had CBC because I think that CTV only came like a bit later than that. So, yes, everybody watched the Ed Sullivan Show. He was like the voice of America, and he had everybody on there. He did have rock groups, but he also had comedians and opera singers, and, you know, you get a real wide range of entertainment in America at that time.
Well, that is one thing I really, I don't know, I always found the Beatlemania thing, like, hard to understand from my perspective, because, I mean, their songs are catchy, sure, but, like, you know, people treat them like they were the best band in the world, and I think that really helped me understand, was I just didn't see it, like, the way, especially now with the internet and stuff, it must be really baffling for, like, one band to be so huge, because that just doesn't happen anymore.
Well, in the 4 or 5 years that they were really on the top of the heap, they also changed their music dramatically. I mean, they started off with that pretty, now that I'm thinking back, sounds pretty inane, you know, she loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. But they changed very quickly from that tone of music into more of a hard rock sound at some times, and then they went to India and they picked up all the sitars and the Indian sound, and then they were off doing albums that had a whole theme running through them, like Abbey Road, you know, so they kept developing and changing rather than staying with the that little derpy type sound that that was first recognized.
I told you about Strawberry Fields. You know the place where nothing is real. Well, here's another place you can go.
That was another thing I didn't realize till I was reading up about the history of the Beatles is, like the whole thing went kind of fast. Like the whole Beatles legacy from top to bottom was like 7 or 8 years, and they put out albums like every 9 months or something.
Yeah.
So if you were 13 when you started, did you pretty much follow them right through? Like, was there like musical evolution? Like,
yeah, I followed them right through, but I mean, I wasn't a raving Beatle nut case by the time I was about 17, because by that time I was listening very much to other groups like The Who, yes, and Pink Floyd, and the Rolling Stones, and the Moody Blues, and the Kinks, and I mean, I had a whole range of people that I was very into. But the Beatles, I always liked them. And even now, years later, I mean, I put on some Beatles songs, and I'm going down the road with my music on, just singing my little heart out as long as nobody else is in the car with me, because I'm sure they take me off to the bin very quickly.
Yeah, you're the only person that does that. You are a pretty big weirdo. So if I was going to play two Beatles songs, I'll play the first one. But then if I was to play something from like later on toward the later days, can you think of anything that sticks out to you that I should give a spin?
This is not technically a Beatles song, but John Lennon's "Give Peace a Chance" is one of my favorites. But John did that after the Beatles had broken up.
Two, one, two, three, four. We'll be right back.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're still kind of going in a way. Well, I guess there's only two Beatles left now.
Yeah, the thing about them, too, is one reason why they were so popular and their music changed so much is all four of them had different musical sounds, and they put them all together. And, like, of all of them, I think John Lennon was probably the most prolific and the most talented.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean...
He did more of the syrupy, you know, the lovey-type songs. George Harrison didn't produce nearly as much, but what he did produce was incredibly different and entirely different than the other two. And then old Ringo Starr, it was a great drummer. She did produce some stuff, but wasn't quite up there with the other boys as far as that.
I was going to ask that, like, is it just me, or did Ringo's songs seem like they kind of sucked?
I listen for your footsteps coming up the drive. Listen for your footsteps, but they don't arrive. Waiting for your knock, dear, on my old front door. I don't hear it. Does it mean you don't love me anymore?
But again, you had to be one of those people that was just kind of crazy. I mean, it was so insane. You'd be like down in the kitchen, probably having a fight with your mother, and then up in the radio upstairs, you'd hear this song coming. Oh, gotta go upstairs! Roll upstairs so you could listen to the sound. Plaster the walls with pictures so that when we had to move a few years later, all the wallpaper came off too, because all these pictures had been taped on the wall. I mean, literally wallpapered with pictures of the Beatles and articles from wherever, whatever, no matter how inane it was, had to cut that out to save it.
It really is, like, different from when I was that age, because, like, I guess our big band was Nirvana, but it really wasn't. Like, if you look at a list of the top 100 best-selling albums of the 90s, Nirvana is not very high up there. Like, it was still Mariah Carey and Garth Brooks and shit selling all the albums. But, yeah, the Beatles, I mean, they were on top of the heap. They sold all the albums. And then even looking back, everybody still gives them, like, a big artistic thumbs up. Like, it's kind of like this weird perfect storm of, like, everything.
Yeah, and really I can't explain it, except that I know I was a part of it, and it was just a feeling. And I think it affected girls more than boys. Like, when you look at early shots of people at shows and that, yes, there are a few boys in there, but most of it, it's these girls behaving completely like crazy.
So it's interesting to me, though, just to get, I don't know, I guess, it's like I need a guided tour, kind of, because obviously I've heard all of the big singles tons of times, but I keep, like, people will point out little songs I never heard before. Like, did you ever hear on, I think it was on Rubber Soul, it's a song John Lennon did about, it's, like, kind of creepy. He's like, you better run for your life if you can, little girl.
That album is an excellent, Rubber Soul. That, I think I was in grade 9 when Rubber Soul came out, and it was like, oh, wow, this thing is fabulous.
Well, I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than to be with another man. You better keep your head, little girl, I won't know where I am. You better run for your life if you can, little girl. Hide your head in the sand, little girl. Catch you with another man, that's the end of, little girl. Jealous mind, and I can't spend my whole life trying just to make you toe the line. You better run for your life if you can, little girl. Hide your head in the sand, little girl. Catch you with another man, that's the end, little girl. With another man, that's the end, little girl. With another man, that's the end, little girl. Na, na, na. Na, na, na. Na, na, na.
They made political statements, too, that were, of course, everybody was doing political statements, but I remember George Harrison's The Tax Man. I mean, and you're like, you're a kid, right? And you know your parents are complaining about paying taxes, and all of a sudden here's this fella that you've got lots of respect for, and he's talking about the tax man taking you, and you start getting a real hate on for tax people. And you know, and of course you have to remember too, it was a time when there was a lot of political statements made by young people against authority. You know, you were against your parents or against the government or against everybody. And here was music that supported that. And it just kind of fit into that time and that place. Now, thinking back and listening to some of this stuff, I say, oh boy, that was pretty lame stuff. but you liked it, and you still kind of listen to it, and it's catchy. And but a lot of it was because at the time and place that it was, that's what made it. Because some of that stuff, if it came out nowadays, you'd be saying, oh, boy, what a piece of crap that was.
Although that song Taxman, and I'm glad you brought that up, because the reason I went back and found that song is, like, this is just a good example of how the Beatles have, like, echoed through the decades, is I heard Juliana Hatfield, who's just like a, you know, chick musician from my kind of era, and Kurt Cobain, both about two separate songs, were like, yeah, I'm basically just ripping off the riff of Taxman. Yeah, it's like, what the fuck is this magical song Taxman that everyone steals shit from?
One, two, three, four. One, two. Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. The tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. If you drive a car, I'll tax the street. If you drive to sit, I'll tax your seat. If you get too cold, I'll tax the heat. If you take a walk, I'll tax your food.
Over the years, there's been so many people who have nabbed on to Beatles songs and have redone them. Because, not all of them, but there's certain ones that just that keep surfacing every time, because they really are pretty good. Pretty darn good. And they've survived time.
And I really do think, like, that it would have been kind of interesting to grow up right at that. Just, like, it seems like you were, like, at the perfect point on the curve where... Because, I don't know, like, I didn't have any bands that grew up with me the way the Beatles seemed like they did. I mean, I had, like, Marilyn Manson was creepy, and then he has boobs, you know? That's not really the same. It's like nothing...
Well, listen, the other thing you have to understand about Beatlemania and that why it affected those girls of that age group, it wasn't all the music.
Right.
It was those guys. Like, they were just so sexy. And, you know, like, you're 13 or 14, and just kind of coming into that... Like, what's a good-looking fella? And here they were, and they were just so different. So yeah, it was a you know, and that's why when you see pictures of those girls screaming and they're yelling at her name, Paul, that has nothing to do with Paul's music. That's because he was pretty sexy looking when he was like 20 years old.
He was the pretty one. He had
2 years old.
He had those little doe eyes and stuff. Yeah.
yeah, good-looking fella. They had you know what was long hair in those days because everybody else had crew cuts.
Right.
So it's Beatlemania is more than just the music. That was a big part of it, but it was that look and the way they talked and, you know, John Lennon right from the get-go was always like a tongue-in-cheek and making all these little sarcastic remarks when you hear him in interviews, and that was just so cool. Like when you're 13 or 14, oh, that's just so cool.
Wasn't he the one that made the Beatles are bigger than Jesus comment?
Oh, yes, and that had quite a big impact. I remember being in the kitchen. And my brother Chris and I having a great big royal fight with our mother because, you know, she said, what a terrible thing that he said that. And we said, yes, but it's true. And fight, terrible thing to say, you know, oh, comparing yourself to Jesus, what's sacrilege? And we said, yes, but it's true. And here's this big yelling match going on, one of many that we had in the teen years. But to this day, you know, sorry, she was wrong.
I remember.
I was right.
I remember when I was in London, Erica was explaining to her mom stuff like how Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds comes out to LSD. She's like, the Beatles didn't do drugs, no. Which I'm sure they didn't at first, but pretty obvious something was going on as things progressed.
Yes, there was definitely something going on.
Let me take you down, cause I'm going to Strawberry Field. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry feels forever. No one I think is in my tree. I mean, it must be high or low. That is, you can't, you know, tune in, but it's all right. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Always know, sometimes think it's me, but you know I know when it's a dream. I think I know, I mean, yes, but it's all wrong. That is, I think I disagree. Let me take you down, cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever.
This is kind of not exactly related, but I'm just kind of curious about how you had like tons and tons and tons of brothers and sisters, like 12, am I right?
Yeah.
So, man, I mean, how did you even have the money to buy fucking Beatles albums? Like, how did that even work? That just...
Well, we had to work for any of that stuff. I mean, our parents didn't, they didn't have the money to give us for that, so we worked. You know, you'd babysit and your money would go to buying that sort of thing. As I said, when I was like 13, too young to be babysitting and stuff, our mother, God love her, whenever you went to go to the store to buy a loaf of bread or whatever, you took a commission.
Right.
So, hey, and it was never very much, you know, just a few cents or whatever, nickel, dime, quarter, whatever. But that's why you always wanted to suddenly be the one to go to the store because, oh, yeah, got to get that book. And I have to say that Mom was always very good about if I was down at the drugstore and I would come home because, oh, my God, there'd been the most recent thing of Teen Beat or something down there, and it had Beatles article in it. And maybe I was probably pleading and making a scene, I guess. I'd say I was being pretty good, just pleading. She'd work over the money.
Nice.
Very often, even though she knew I was going to cut up the book and plaster the walls with it. I guess it was kind of like, just give that to her so she'll keep out of my hair.
Right. Well,
so
cool.
It's going to take 75 cents or whatever, a dollar, to go buy that book. Here, go get it.
Nice. Well, I think this will make a nice little segment. I'll just find some Beatles songs and sprinkle them throughout, and it'll be cool.
Good. Good.
So, yeah.
Well, as I said, now you have to put it in its time and its place, because if I was picking a song from when I was in my 20s or my 30s or later, it would be entirely different and coming from a whole different angle. But that was a pretty big deal.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for contributing to my show.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. I don't know. I mean, I suppose there's that many old dinosaurs that you can find who were actual Beatles fans all that many years ago, so it'll be a different angle for you.
Yeah, and it's just something I was curious about. It's just a good excuse to blab anyway.
Okay. Well, let me know how the tape works out, okay?
Sure. I'm glad this worked. My little jury-rigged recorder thing, it worked really good. I love you, Mom.
I love you too, Keith.
Look at all the lovely people. Look at all the lovely people. Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Thank you.
birds singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbirds singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.